So imagine you're training with your buddy. Let's say you guys are both power lifters. Your buddy shows up to the gym and you're like, "Whoa, buddy, you look like garbage. Like, how much did you sleep last night?" And it's like, "Oh, you know, I only slept like 6 hours." It's like, "Why? Like, what's going on?" It's like, "Oh, no reason. I just kept myself up because on meet day, I only ever sleep 6 hours because I'm really nervous because we have to travel to the meets. I don't sleep well in a hotel. So if I'm not going to be well recovered on meet day, then why should I train, you know, well recovered and well slept?" Speed training myths. Some sports don't need to train max velocity, the concept of triple extension, and max effort versus max speed. Super important, super relevant things that you've probably heard before. I'm here to share my stories, lessons, and experiences on all of these topics, what I believe. And although this is just my opinion and my experiences, there are some grains of truth, some value that you can take out of this, regardless of what side of the fence you sit on. I'm your host, Matt Tometz. Welcome to the Talking Shop podcast, where I'm here to share my stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. Super excited to take you through these three things, like I said, with analogies of each, with three or four main bullet points, talking points, as well as a visual demonstration or a source of evidence, things like that for each. Super excited to get into this, super relevant. Let's do it. So first, some sports don't need to train max velocity, or the myth, "I shouldn't train max velocity because I never reach it in games." And here are two examples. Not training max velocity is like, and top speed sprinting, max velocity sprinting. Okay. I only accelerate in games and I never reach, you know, truly 100% speed. For example, basketball players, the court is only 92 feet and it's never the full 92 feet. So it's really only acceleration as an example. Or a sport like golf, obviously they never sprint. So not training max velocity or top speed sprinting is like intentionally not sleeping an adequate amount for training because you don't sleep well on game day. So imagine you're training with your buddy. Let's say you guys are both power lifters. Your buddy shows up to the gym and you're like, "Whoa, buddy, you look like garbage. Like, how much did you sleep last night?" And it's like, "Oh, you know, I only slept like 6 hours." It's like, "Why? Like, what's going on?" It's like, "Oh, no reason. I just kept myself up because on meet day, I only ever sleep 6 hours because I'm really nervous because we have to travel to the meets. I don't sleep well in a hotel. So if I'm not going to be well recovered on meet day, then why should I train, you know, well recovered and well slept?" And it's like, "Well, what? Like, yeah, that's cool that like, you know, your system and pattern and routine for meet day, but like, that doesn't mean you should sabotage your training." It's like, "Well, you know, if I'm training for meets, well, it should replicate that environment, right?" It's like, "No, well, if you're well recovered during training, first off, you're going to feel good. Second off, you're going to have a better training session. Third off, it's going to help you recover and make those gains to consequently help you do better in meets. Now, although you might be tired on meet day, all of the gains from training will help make meet day that much easier if you sleep when you have the opportunity to sleep." And then your buddy's like, "Nope. That's not how I will be on meet day. So I'm going to try to replicate it as much as possible." So there's one example. It doesn't make much sense, right? Next, trying to justify sports specialization. So I was going to say early sports specialization. Let's just say anything before college. So if someone says, "Oh, well, if it's not baseball, I'm not doing it because I'm only a baseball player." It's like, "Well, don't you want to be a better athlete?" "Nope. I only just want to be better at baseball. That's the only thing that I do." It's like, well, what if some of the things that you learn in those other sports or some of the skills or qualities you work on could transfer? Well, is it hitting, throwing, running around bases? No, but it's just like helping you on other things." "Nope, I don't want it then." It's like, well, what if being bouncier, like playing basketball, would that help you sprint faster? Or what if coordinating your body to rotate like golf, well, would that help? Or just things like that? Is it swinging a baseball bat? Is it throwing a baseball? Then I don't want it." So just some analogies that don't make that much sense, but it's actually more similar to not training max velocity. So going back to the myth, I shouldn't train max velocity because I never reach it in games. So this is called speed training, not baseball specific training or lacrosse specific training or golf specific training. You know what baseball specific training is called? Practice. There's a reason this is called speed training, because you're working on all aspects of your speed. We're keeping it as general as possible. Yes, there are ways you can make it more sport specific. For example, our baseball players, we do crossover starts for accelerations because that's how they'll be timed on their 60s. Or maybe a few components of the agility can reflect what they might be doing in games. But it's called speed training. We're trying to increase all components of our speed, not replicate what you do in practice just inside a speed facility. Next, there's nervous system benefits. The nervous system ties all components of sport together. Now, going back to the example of sports specialization, it's like, well, if you got better at jumping from basketball because it's very explosive, would that help you pitch? Well, probably. There's these commonalities in these things. And well, if you got a better nervous system from sprinting because it's the fastest thing that the human body can do, well, would that help you swing a golf club faster? Probably. So in becoming a better athlete, there's more commonalities or similarities than dissimilarities, or more commonalities than differences. There are things that transfer and cross over, even if it doesn't directly replicate and mimic the sport that is the end goal. Because sprinting, max velocity sprinting, is the fastest thing that the human body can do. Next is this concept of speed reserve. So let's go back to basketball, for example. Let's say 80%. 80% of your max speed in a short court, it's never the full court, whatever it may be. 20 miles an hour is your best speed. Well, 80% of that is 16 miles an hour. But if you do max velocity sprinting and you raise your ceiling from 20 miles an hour to 22 miles an hour, well, your 80% just went up from 16 miles an hour to 17, if I did that math right. Don't roast me, please. But basically, your 80% just went up. But consequently, with the new ceiling, 22 miles an hour, well, your old speed, 16 miles an hour, is now less of a percent of 22. So that same speed is now easier. You know, some of the best gains and results we see from our training at TC Boost is in our cross-country athletes, because they never do top speed running. They have a better kick at the end and their ceiling is so much higher. So either their race pace, let's say it's 75%, well, that speed just went up. Or if their old speed, they would run at 8 miles an hour, well, that just became that much easier because their ceiling is that much higher. So that's the concept of the speed reserve. And last, you reduce the risk of injury and you increase performance. You know, some of the biggest body part benefits, I guess, to use that phrase, is first, well, we'll go reduce the risk of injury for hamstrings, because the most force you can ever put on the hamstrings is during top speed sprinting. Well, wouldn't you want to prepare the hamstrings to potentially not get pulled? The most specific way to reduce running specific hamstring injuries is by sprinting, and specifically at max velocity. Yeah, you can get the hamstrings stronger, RDLs, Nordic hamstring curls, whatever it may be, but the force just isn't the same because sprinting happens so fast. And next, because you experience 4 times your body weight in top speed sprinting, the stiffness benefits of getting the ankles stronger, coordinating just stiffness of your entire lower body through your core, transmitting it to your upper body, whatever it may be, is just so beneficial that you can't not do max velocity sprinting. So there are my 4 points on that. And next, here's a visual example for those who are listening. Here's a graph from Zach Dakin of Track Football Consortium 2021. He has a graph here of people running a 40-yard dash. You have the velocity of the fastest athlete. You know, it goes up and then plateaus. And the next fastest athlete is a little bit lower and a little bit lower. But the graph on the right shows the same acceleration or speed curve of that 40-yard dash. But instead of velocity on the y-axis, it's percentage of their velocity. And at the end, everyone is at 100%, and about 10 meters in, they're about 85, 90%. And everyone's percent of their max velocity is the same. So if you raise your top speed, your acceleration also goes up. Everyone accelerates the same. It's all, everything is relative. So if we increase our top, well, then everything else goes up as well. So that's my justification for justifying speed, top speed training, max velocity training for all athletes, regardless of the sport. Next, triple extension. I should always try to get triple extension on every step. That's the goal. And I'm sure you've heard this, triple extension, you know, like push the ground away, whatever it may be. So making triple extension the goal is like budgeting and only focusing on making your grocery bill go down. So let's say you're living on your own. You want to start budgeting for the first month. You just observe where your spending is. Groceries, utilities, dining out, subscriptions and services, stuff like that. Throughout the next month, you budget, you try to cut here and there. And then at the end of the next month, you go, oh my gosh, I'm so good at budgeting. You know, I saved some money overall compared to last month. My grocery bill is way lower. It's like, well, yeah, you did save money and you did technically budget, but you went so hard on this grocery bill that you were underfueled because you were eating less. And you bought really crappy food that you didn't like eating and it just tasted bad because you were trying to save money. Versus on the other end, if you took a step back and said, really, what is going to save me money? What is my biggest opportunity to save me money? Assuming that the grocery bill will just be what it is because I need food to live and I want to be fueled and feel my best over the course of the next month. Well, there's probably bigger opportunities to save money. You can eat out less. You can cancel your Netflix if you never really use it anyways. Or you can, what else do people spend money on these days? Pokemon cards, for example, definitely not me. You can say, oh, well, I'm going to limit myself. Instead of 5 Pokemon cards a month, I'm only going to buy 3. And ipso facto, because you were so conscious of budgeting and saving money on all these other areas, it was a subconscious thought in the back of your mind. And yes, you did make a few smarter choices in the grocery store, not going for the brand name, or maybe buying in bulk instead of thinking short term. So yes, when you're budgeting, your grocery bill does go down, but that's more of a byproduct because you just have this budget mindset as opposed to just focus, hyper-focusing on this grocery bill component. You understand that there is going to be grocery bills, but there are bigger opportunities to help save money and budget. So myth, I should always get triple extension in every step. That's the goal. So is that the end goal or is that the byproduct? Now, the goal is always to move forwards as fast as possible and consequently set yourself up for the next step so you can continue moving forwards. And it's just like with the budgeting example. Well, is saving money on the grocery bill the end goal, or is that just a byproduct of being conscious of kind of everything else and that kind of trickle down into the grocery bill? So how does a broad jump work? This is literally so specific to triple extension. You're literally trying to go as far as you can forwards. I've never heard anyone cue triple extension in a broad jump. How do you cue a broad jump? You throw your hands forwards, upwards and forwards as far as you can. You explosively throw your belt buckle forwards, whatever it may be. I don't think anyone would ever cue a vertical jump by pushing the ground away or by really trying to squeeze your knee and your hip and your ankle. Or same thing for like a vertical jump. Like you say, touch the ceiling or you hold a ball above your athlete's head to try to get. Now, sometimes in a vertical jump, I guess you could say like push the ground away, but you're never going to cue this internal focus of triple extension. But I'll humor you and the people that focus on triple extension. So let's give an internal cue and an external cue for triple extension and for triple flexion. So triple flexion would be bringing the knee up in front of you in an A position, flexing the hip, the knee, and the ankle. So an internal cue, you know, squeeze your knee. That would be, or make your leg super straight, you know, behind you, triple extension, triple flexion, you know, knee up, toe up, drive your knee forwards hard. And I just want to feel this like A position in front of you. Or an external cue. I want you to push the ground away. I want you to be so aggressive that the turf wrinkles behind you, or you make the globe spin behind you. I've heard coaches say that before. Or an external focus for triple flexion would be, imagine my knee is like 3 feet in front of you and you have to punch your knee through my hand. And just this idea of you're trying to knee a board in front of you. There's like 10 karate boards for every step you're taking. So do you want the athlete's focus to be on their foot behind them? Or do you want their focus to be in front of them? And which brings me to my next point, everything good in sprinting happens in front or front side, because consequent to a broad jump, you have to continue sprinting. Now, if you did multiple broad jumps in a row, I bet triple extension would look a lot different versus if you're just doing one broad jump all out. The landing, you don't really have to worry about that much. You're just worried about a huge jump. Those broad jumps, that the picture of takeoff would look completely different in like a three continuous broad jump versus one broad jump at a time. And in the next slide, I have the reasoning why triple extension doesn't always happen. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't work on the hip, knee, and ankle extensors, just to focus the athlete on like what is behind them. And to focus on that is completely disregarding what makes sprinting sprinting. Multiple steps, putting it all together, continuing to make speed and build speed on itself. The next step. So the Altus kinogram, there's an awesome article on Simply Faster. I believe Stu McMillan wrote this. He's super smart. I love consuming any of his content. So there should be slight extension of the hip of the stance leg. The athlete should be encouraged to push vertically in the ground while they are sprinting. So slight extension of the hip. There should be a noticeable lack of triple extension at the knee joint of the stance leg. Over pushing horizontally at top speed compromises ratios and all stuff like that. Now this is top speed running, so it might be a little bit different, but there should be a slight hip extension and not complete knee extension in top speed sprinting. And we should observe approximately a 90 degrees of flexion of the foot versus like super extended ankle, toe all the way behind you. And then there's actually a paragraph devoted completely to triple extension in this article that I've linked here. And I'll just read a few sentences of it. Triple extension refers to the simultaneous extension of the ankle, knee, and hip joints. Coaches should understand, however, that complete and full triple extension rarely occurs in sprinting. On toe off, we do not see complete extension at the knee, as the thigh moves immediately forwards at this point. Furthermore, the activity of the extensor muscle groups deteriorates before complete triple extension can support increased force. So basically, your body starts recovering, your leg starts recovering and coming forwards before you can truly reach triple extension because, hey, you have more steps to take. Like I said, the one broad jump versus the multiple broad jumps. So to focus on what's behind you, to focus on only the current step, would be missing the boat on sprinting, and that would throw everything else off. Going back to this budgeting example, because I was really proud of myself when I thought of it, because you're trying to reduce the grocery bill, well, you're hungry. Well, you're probably going to spend more on the dining out. Yes, you know, you can focus on one thing in isolation, but there's so many other components that go into it. And all of these things are super interconnected. Last, max effort. So myth, if I'm sprinting at 100% effort, that means I'm at 100% speed. Or if I'm sprinting at 100% effort, that'll get me faster. So assuming effort is speed is like assuming putting money in a brokerage account will automatically get you an 8% return. So yes, I'm into investing And I think that this makes a ton of sense. So everyone always hears, oh, over the course of time, you know, there's an average 8 to 10% return from the stock market, you know, so you just put your money in and boom, you can just assume 8%. And I always, side note, I always hate when I'm listening to these investing podcasts and they always like start the episode with, you know, this is not financial advice. This is just our opinion, and past performance or past results does not indicate future performance. Or just because it happened in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future. And then they always reference the 8 to 10%. It's just so so frustrating. You're just acknowledging like, hey, I don't want to be rude, but I'm going to be rude, whatever. So assuming effort is speed is like assuming just putting money into Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, whatever it may be, will give you 8% return. Well, let's flip it. If you're getting 8 to 10% return, well, chances are, yes, you have money in some sort of brokerage account. Now, there are concepts and principles that can help get us closer and almost ensure or check every box that'll make us most likely to get 8 to 10% return. Diversification, have a variety of different stocks, sectors, whatever it may be. You can put most of your money into an S&P 500 ETF or index fund. So the top 500 companies, it takes the bad ones out, adds the ones that are doing well. You know, the S&P 500 routinely outperforms hedge fund managers and financial advisors, people that you pay to manage your money, or just dollar cost averaging. So instead of, because humans are emotional creatures, just because humans are, they follow their emotions too much. So they put money in when it's going hot, they take the money out when it's bad, which is the opposite of what you should do. So dollar cost averaging says every 2 weeks, I'm going to put in $500, which helps take into account or mitigate the risk of all the volatility because you're putting in consistent money over time, dollar cost averaging. If you do all of those things right, chances are you'll get a decent return. But simply just putting money into an account or randomly picking stocks, not being diversified, only putting money in when the market's hot, well, that's not going to guarantee, just because you're in the game doesn't mean that you're going to do well. So that's my analogy. So going back to the myth, if I'm sprinting at 100% effort, that means 100% speed. Or if I'm sprinting at 100% effort, that'll get me faster. So effort is relative. Speed is absolute. Yes, 100% effort is the fastest that you can go voluntarily at that moment, at that point in time, but speed is absolute. So when I say speed, I mean like straight up miles per hour. So if your best is 20 miles an hour, you have to be at 95% of that. You have to be at 19 miles an hour to get faster. So 100% speed needs 100% effort. Now, it's pretty hard to sprint all out and reach 20 miles an hour if you're not trying 100%. But consequently, just because you're sprinting at 100% effort doesn't mean that you're necessarily at 100% speed. So just like, you know, if you're getting those, that 8% return, well, yes, you have money in the stock market. But just because you have money in the stock market doesn't mean that you're getting that 8% return. And then next, just like, why is rest important? Why is rest a concept? If you can simply just sprint as fast as you can in that moment, well, why don't you just sprint as fast as you can for like 2 or 3 minutes? Then you get 3 minutes straight stimulus of getting faster. That's why work to rest ratios. That's why physiology is a thing, because speed is absolute. You need to rest to recover to hit the speeds necessary to make speed gains. And last, speed gains happen at 95% plus of your best speed. Speed is absolute. Take your best speed straight up miles an hour. This isn't, well, I guess it is percent, but it's an objective threshold of your absolute speed. So here is this chart from Charlie Francis, high intensity sprinting, 90 to 95% of your best time. Not saying you're sprinting at 95% of your best effort. If your body is garbage, or if your body's feeling like garbage, if you are not recovered in between sprints, yes, you can be at 100% effort, but that could put you at 80% speed, and that's not going to get you faster. So even in this five bullet points of high intensity, 95% to 100% of your best time requires complete recovery between reps, because there is more than just effort that goes into sprinting between 95 and 100% of your best speed. And next, I have this chart that I made here that auto-calculates kids, athletes, 95% of their PR or their best, and 90% as well. And on this chart, this has nothing to do with how hard they're trying. It's straight up, did you hit those speeds or did you not? So effort and speed are related, but not synonymous. So next, to wrap up, max velocity sprinting, going back to, you know, I'll go one through three. Yes, there is context, and I can't always speak in absolutes. So max velocity sprinting for all athletes, it makes total sense to me. And I believe that with my analogies and my four reasons make a lot of sense. Yes, you have to build into it safely. Yes, there is risk if they don't do it in sports that they're at increased risk because they're not as used to it. Well, just because there is some risk doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, or you can do it smartly to reduce the risk of injury. And yeah, you should spend an appropriate and consequent amount of time on it. If you're a basketball player, do you need to be devoting 3 days a week to speed training, 30 minutes each day? No, you can spend 1 day doing top speed technique work, then 1 day measured all out sprinting. That's like 30 minutes total for the entire week, but not zero time. I think that would be more detrimental than even just 10 minutes a day, 2 to 3 times a week, and hitting those velocities. So you can build into it safely, not no time, and spend some time relative to kind of everything else. Triple extension. So yeah, there are drills that can like work on that as a byproduct. So if we're doing triple extension one steps, so band around the waist, anchored to the wall, get into a sprinter stance and do a huge explosive first step. I'm not cueing triple extension. I'm cueing big thigh split, punch your knee forwards, see how far you can make your belt buckle actually move forwards on this. Those are the cues that I'm saying. And the triple extension looks fantastic, because that's the byproduct of them trying to move their hips as far forwards as possible. And if we were doing that drill, well, step number two would look awful because they're trying so hard on that first step. But even if we do like a banded two-step, the triple extension looks way different, going back to that broad jump example. Olympic lifts. You're not going to cue triple extension. You might cue getting as tall as you can and being really patient and letting yourself get to this extended position, but you're not going to put the athlete's focus on squeezing the calf, the quad, the glute to get this triple extension. Like I said, that's a byproduct of being patient, having a huge pull in a clean or a snatch, for example. But sprinting is not the time and place to be working and putting your athlete's focus on this triple extension. And consequently, well, what do you do if it's not triple extension? Well, you coach super aggressive front side. You cue launching forwards. You make the focus maximizing moving forwards and consequently setting the athlete up for success for that next step by getting front side. So then you're going to hit the ground. The other leg comes forward, similar to what Stu was talking about in that Kinogram article. Last, max effort. So sprinting should be at max effort. I'm not discrediting max effort. I'm just saying that they're not synonymous. Assuming 100% effort and assuming 100% speed, that's just not, they just can't go back and forth like that. So when you are at 100% effort, hopefully every time you sprint, you just have to make sure that the speed is there, because that is what the body is going to respond to, not the effort at which you sprint. Action steps. So first, some of your speed myths you'd like me to chat about. What are some things you've heard some coaches talk about, or things that you coach, but the more you've coached, you're like, yeah, I don't really know if that's true or not. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Coach Big Toe, Coach BIGTOE, or you can just search my name and reflect on these and think about what you can take away, the grains of truth into your own training and your own coaching. This is just my perspective. Now, I said grains of truth. I didn't say a whole 5-pound bag of rice of truth, just the grains kind of here and there. There's some truth to it. I'm not perfect. So three super relevant topics. You probably experience all of these on a daily basis. And I think it's good to share my perspective as a speed coach. I coach a lot of athletes. So thanks for tuning in. Run fast.